Hi, everyone. This is the Broke Girl Society podcast. I'm your host, Christina. Thank you so much for listening in. Today's episode is going to be brought to you by our sponsors, the Better Institute, where people go to get better. You can find them at betterinstitute.com. And our new sponsor, Birch's Health, an online gambling addiction therapy. You can do it all online. You can find them at birchshealth.com. Therapy is an amazing tool to add to your toolbox in recovery. It's a great way to stop that bleeding and start that healing. So please check them out. All right, everyone. We are back with another episode. And today we are speaking with Rob. And Rob is 1 year in recovery from gambling harm. He's just 24 years old. And he is sharing his story in a big way. He is choosing to recover out loud through the mediums of YouTube and TikTok and Instagram. And this is a really small community for gambling harm and for the social media aspects of gambling harm. And so I was glad to be connected with Rob to hear his story and to be part of what he's doing out there. And so he is joining me today to kind of talk about the ins and outs of sharing our stories on social media. He turns the mic around on me and asked me some, you know, questions about my own recovery journey, and which is a fun thing, I think, sometimes to kind of have the mic turned around on my own podcast. Today I am 1,000 days from that last bet, and so I thought this would be a fitting episode to get out to you guys. I appreciate all the support, and yeah, so let's get on into this episode. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Christina. Thank you for having me on. And I'm happy to spend my 1 year doing something so good and so helpful for everyone.
Yeah. And just to kind of let the audience know, you are 24 years old, right?
Yep.
And when did your gambling start?
So I started gambling when I was 18 years old with the daily fantasy sports contests that are technically classed as sweepstakes. So I guess it depends on which official you asked as to if I started gambling or not. However, that quickly devolved into sports betting, which led to the gauntlet of pretty much everything by the time I was 21.
Oh, wow. And so from the time you were 21 to the time you were 23, you just gambled, you know, in all your spare time?
Yeah, I tell my community, which is the honest truth, that I was probably gambling for an average of 6 to 8 hours per day from the time that I was 18 until I was 23.
Wow. And I am personally talking to women younger and younger who are students, you know, gambling. And it's, I think there's a big misconception that women gamblers are all older gamblers. And it's like, no, I mean, I've talked to women who are 18. I've talked to women who are 70, like I'm 45. And a lot of the women I talk to are right there in that middle-aged mark as well. So there is no like predetermined thing when it comes to gambling for anybody. What I find fascinating about like the work that you're doing is that you do these small short form videos in TikTok that are really just kind of grab you, and you talk about, you know, just those behaviors and habits a lot of times that us as gamblers fall into. What is it that made you want to start doing like TikTok videos? I get this question a lot too, because we're kind of unicorns in this as far as like putting ourselves out there. So what was it for you?
Well, I hope this makes the final cut, but I'm hoping that you follow along in these footsteps as well. But getting the word out in a very quick fashion allows viewers to stay engaged a little bit more often than they might otherwise. If someone's seeking out a podcast or a long form piece of content regarding this problem, there's a decent chance they're probably deeper into the problem than someone else. I think that a lot of people that are active in gambling and not even realizing that they have a problem are more prone to find content that is short form about gambling because they're not necessarily seeking out a problem gambling platform. So when I put out content, I specifically optimize it so that it will rank in search along with regular gambling content, which if you've ever seen my comments, which I know that you have, lead to me getting a lot of crap from a lot of very young people who are early on in their gambling. But I'm there to plant a seed of what's in their mind responsible gambling, and in my mind letting people know that if they ever do want to quit gambling, they can find the resources on my account. And so the power in the short form content is the increase in your reach as to who you can get to, And if I think back to my gambling, I wouldn't have quit if someone reached me when I was 18. I wouldn't have quit when I was 19. But if someone got to me when I was about 20 or 21, I think I could have saved myself 2 years worth of pain. And that's the intention that I have when I make content. I'm not there to talk someone who's playing their first blackjack hand out of going back for their second, but I'm trying to stop someone at number 1,000 rather than number 10,000, if that makes sense.
Trying to get to them when they're kind of questioning if they have a problem or not, versus like kind of going further and being like, man, I've had a problem for a long time. Just trying to get them in that thing. Was social media something that was helpful for you when you were trying to figure out how to stop and what to do next?
So I can take that question in two forms. In terms of, did I find something that helped me stop? No, which is the entire intent of why I've made the content. There's not a lot of visibility on gambling addiction awareness. So that's why I've put myself out there to share my story. But in terms of making the content, it has been very helpful in my recovery because it serves the same function for me as a GA meeting or talking about my addiction at a 12-step meeting. Because when you go and you give your therapy, you're kind of reflecting on your past week. You're reflecting on the reasons why you're staying away from gambling. And if you make six videos a day about why gambling ruined your life, it kind of gives you the same therapeutic benefit of spewing your guts and letting everyone know what the problem is. And, there's going to be people out there that don't get it. There's going to be people that complain about what you say. But at the end of the day, it's therapeutic in itself. And it also helps other people as it can get broadcasted out to millions of people.
Yeah, I've been on a few of your lives, and some of those comments have been so terrible. Like, I think the one I see the most is like, you quit gambling too soon, dude. Like that's why you had a problem, because you quit too soon. And it was like, I just, those people that hide behind their internet names or whatever. Look, I'm like aging myself, their internet names. But how do you handle that type of, I think that's been one of the things that have kept me from doing like more TikToks and stuff like that, because I can't handle the trolls. I mean, I get them in Messenger, and I get them, I have had a few stalkers. Like, I struggle with that. How do you feel about it? To me, it feels like you're just like, wipe it off your shoulder. You're like, yeah.
There's a few ways to read into it. And let's take, for example, just the kind of, we'll call them troll comment that you've given as a reference. Like, hey, man, you quit too soon. You're a loser because you stopped, not because you lost, but because you actually just gave it up. And so there's two ways to read that comment, right? There's the first way, which is, this guy's just trying to mess with me. He's trying to have a good time and, make a joke out of it because it's an internet meme. The second way to read it, and with that first way, it is what it is. You're messing with a little kid. But the second way to read it is to give it credence and to think this person actually believes what they have to say. And even if they don't, there's a learning lesson to be taken out by actually replying to the comment. Because if you are one spin away from a jackpot, right? Say you are, just take it as a fact. The next time that I gamble, I'm going to win a jackpot. What's going to happen next? Because I know damn well what happens when I've won a jackpot. I've won jackpots, or I wouldn't have gotten addicted to gambling. It'd be ridiculous if you just got addicted to something you lost over and over again. I know that if I won a jackpot within hours, probably, and let's call it days at best, that jackpot's going to end up back in the casino. And the reason that happens is because all wins are just future losses. So that's typically what I reply when I get one of those comments that, hey, it doesn't really matter if I quit too soon or if I was one spin away. Because I know that the way that I am, the way that I approached gambling, it's only a matter of time until that actually turns into a loss. So it's all really just the same situation playing out over and over again. And the only way for it to stop is if we stop.
I like that answer. That's a great way to put it. All right. Do you want to flip the mic on me and ask me any kind of questions that you've got?
Yeah, absolutely. So for your audience's benefit, the kind of content that I create, my typical demographic that I reach is roughly 85% men, and typically they trend on the younger side, between 18 and 30 years old. So I'm getting the word out and I'm spreading it to, a lot of people. But what I'm failing to do is to reach the audience that is women and get the female perspective on gambling. So I think that in a world where we're seeing a constant talk about sports gambling and the rise of sports gambling and the advertising, What does gambling in the modern day, what does the gambling problem in the modern day look like for a woman?
Women, a lot of women, and I can't speak for every woman. It's definitely an escaping thing, right? And I've talked about this, and if for the people that are listening on the podcast, like a lot of the things that we're escaping is just the stress of life. We're the primary caregivers a lot of times for our partners, for our kids, for animals, for parents, for siblings sometimes. And it's just like it gets really, really depleting. And before long you're like giving out of an empty cup. And so a lot of the times gambling shows up as a way of like, ah, I just need some me time. And the machines or the phone, depending on how they gambled, isn't asking anything except for like money. And for some reason in that gambling brain, it's like money isn't like, it's no object. It's like Monopoly money when you're gambling. And it's just like it allows that escapism that we're struggling to do. And it's like, especially if things aren't going great in our relationships, or our parents are getting sick or ill and we're struggling with that, just life. And so I think a lot of times when you're talking to a woman, it has a lot to do with escapism. And it can be, that can be a little bit different than men who gamble.
Well said. Now, we've had a lot of conversations, but oftentimes it's you've been asking me questions. So I'm really curious. I know a little bit about your backstory, but why did you quit gambling?
For me, gambling, I gambled for about 15 years, the last part of that being destructive. At the end of my gambling career, I like to say, I got so sick of being sick and tired. Like I was constantly juggling everything. I was so just tired of lying, and I just felt like a shell of myself. I'd lost friendships. I'd lost, I was damaging my relationships. I owed everybody money. It was just, I just got so tired, and I started having these thoughts of harming myself. And like everybody would be better off if I wasn't around. I wouldn't be lying and hurting people. And I just didn't understand why gambling was so important that I would risk everything and everyone for it. And so the day I placed my last bet, I was having like really strong feelings of harming myself. And I picked up my phone to see, what time it is and look at all the missed calls and messages. And a picture of my mom and my sisters, which was on the back screen of my phone at my sister's wedding, came up. And I just knew that I had to find a way. Like I couldn't do that to them. And so I knew that I had to find a way of understanding what was going on with me, getting help. And the only way I knew that I could do that would be to let somebody in to the problem. And so I did try calling the GA hotline. I didn't get the best response when I called. Like I got it just wasn't what I expected. And so the next morning I went to my mom, and I just let her know what was going on with me. And she was, I think, sad that I'd been struggling on my own. And yeah, that was like being seen and heard for the first time, and felt like forever, because I was honestly being completely truthful about what was going on with me. And that's an experience that I'll never forget. So I think for me, yeah, I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Thank you for sharing that. I was in a very similar position, and just recently I did a TikTok live where I counted to 9,203. And the reason is because the day that I did it, that's the number of days that I had been alive. And it's estimated in the United Kingdom alone, someone takes their life as a result of gambling due to, or as a result of gambling addiction every single day. So I counted to, memorialize and remember every life that was estimated to have been lost. And that was just from one country. So this is a very serious issue, but Thank you again for sharing your story, because if we don't do it, there's going to be a lot of people going through a lot of crap that they may have otherwise found their way out of. And I'm not much of a spiritual person yet, though I'm trying to become one, but I have to think that there was something involved in seeing that picture of your family on your phone. Whether that be a religious aspect or not, that's for you to decide because it's your own experience. But I'm very happy to hear that, things went that way, and congratulations on, 2.5 years clean. You're coming up on that third year. Things are going really well. So just happy to hear that, and congratulations.
Yeah, and they every, I have three sisters, and they've all been so supportive and surrounded me and my mom, and they've been amazing on this journey. And every, time my monthly anniversary shows up, my sister, who I felt experienced the most harm from my gambling, she sends me a happy anniversary, and like she makes the point to just tell me that, she's proud of me, and same with my mom and my other sisters. And it just means so much to me, because there was a point where I was ready to leave them, and I'm so glad that I chose a different path. And that was very much my higher power stepping in, saying, look, you've been through what you've been through so that you can help others go through what they're going through. And that's really the whole gist of why I do what I do.
No, I agree by the same exact mindset. We're more than qualified to help the person that we used to be. And so I think that what you're doing is commendable. I want to see it continue to grow, and I hope to be a part of that journey as well.
Well, thanks.
Looking into possible next questions. I don't know, we didn't touch on it. We touched on the previous one. So looking into possible next questions, a lot of times when I ask someone, hey, if you could go back in time to the first time you placed a bet, what would you tell yourself? And the immediate answer is to not gamble. So, barring answering that, if you could go back and, talk to yourself very early on in the stages of developing an addiction, is there anything specific that you would tell yourself?
I wish that I could tell myself, I've never thought about telling myself not to gamble. I've thought about telling myself to learn to stand up for yourself, to speak your truth. Because I think that for me, when I recognized the internal symptoms that led me to gamble, a lot of that was never feeling confident enough to share with somebody that I was struggling, or that my opinion mattered, or it's just like a series of relationships where I just never could show up in the way that I wanted to show up. I didn't know how to advocate for myself. I was in a very abusive relationship when my gambling started, and I didn't know how to defend myself. And a lot of my gambling behavior was self-destructive in a way, because I couldn't figure out how to take care of myself. I couldn't figure out how to stand on my own 2 feet. I couldn't figure out how to leave a toxic, abusive relationship. And when I did finally leave that relationship, I entered into another one that wasn't necessarily abusive in that way, but wasn't healthy. And it was because I wish I just learned to better navigate relationships in a healthier way. I don't know if I got to that answer, but yeah, I wish I could say, look, you're worth it. And if somebody walks out of your life because they don't agree with how you feel, it's okay. They're not meant to be in your life. And I wish if I could say anything, it would be that.
I think that was a great answer, because a lot of times people think of their gambling as their relationship between themselves and call it the slot machine, what their relationship is to the result of their bet. But they don't really ever, well, I didn't ever really think about why I was gambling until after it was done. So
Yeah.
the idea of figuring out what's drawing you to this situation, is it some type of negative experience you're having emotionally? That's very powerful to someone for someone to reflect on before things get too bad. So I actually think that was probably the best answer I've heard to that question since I've asked it. So thank you very much for sharing it.
Yeah.
Let's think. I think that if we jump to this topic, you might be able to put into the description that I put you on the hot seat. So let's see if we can do this. If you could come up with one policy implementation to put in for problem gambling in the United States, what would it be?
Oh boy. I've always been one that's kind of steered away from the political side of things. Just because it's so frustrating. But I think financial checks would be a good one, is like, especially for there's so much financial damage, right? I mean, it's gambling. So I think financial checks, like they do in the UK, would be helpful. It would actually probably save a lot of people financial harm. But another thing would be just implementing closing hours. And I know Hatch always talks about this, so I'm going to steal his thing, because it makes a lot of sense. You know, like, bars close at 2 a.m. Casinos should too. That gives people a break, that they have to go home. They have to reflect on what's been going on. And will it save a bunch of people? I'm not sure, but I think it at least give them a pause, and a break. So that would be something that would be helpful as well. But I think too, having resources inside the casino, like a safe place for people to go and talk to somebody, that could be really helpful as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. And I think that with specifically the resources, it's tough because most of the onus for getting help falls onto the gambler. It doesn't really come from the operator side. So even when you look at self-exclusions, like you have to go to the security desk at a casino, which is where they take you if you're getting thrown out for a crime. So it's a little bit of a embarrassing situation to end up going over there. That's how they've designed it. So I think that resources or a specific place inside would do very good things. So thanks for sharing that answer.
Yeah, like a safe place where they could go and see a safe person and say, look, do I have a problem, and talk with them. And I know there are some programs in some of the states that, like, GameSense and things like that do that. But I know that that's not something in Oklahoma, because where I'm from, because a lot of it is tribal, and they kind of operate on their own. And so it's like there's not a lot of regulation intact. And I know for me, from my own personal experience, when I self-excluded, it is extremely intimidating. And then you have to be escorted out like you are a criminal. And a lot of times too, and my experience was fairly smooth. And like, Oklahoma has a statewide self-exclusion, but it doesn't include all the tribes. So I had to go to some of the tribes that were closer to me and like physically self-exclude, which that's a little bit problematic. But they ask you, and I've heard stories. Some of them will try and talk you out of it, or they'll say, well, we could do like a 6 month cool out, or one lady just like ran out of there crying because like they kept trying to be like, are you sure? Maybe you can just like go home for a week and try it again. And she was like, no, just do it and let me get the F out of here. Like, don't make this harder than it already is. So I think, and a lot of that comes from because people do it in their weak moments. And then, I don't want to say weak moments, I hate that. People do it when they're down and they want to, that's just one way to do it, right? But then a week later, they're maybe getting paid again and they want to go back. And so a lot of times I think the resistance is just to save themselves some paperwork a week later. But at the end of the day, if somebody comes to you and says, let me do this, just let them do it. You know what I mean? Like, don't question it. Just do it and deal with what happens later. But that was one of the best things I did. But I didn't actually self-exclude in person until it was several months later, because I struggled over the holidays a little bit about wanting to go because there was some nostalgia there with my family. And so I made the choice to do it then, just to safeguard, just to make sure there was no like windows open, that kind of thing.
Sure. Now, that leads me into a thought. First was that I guess this wouldn't really go on the podcast, but I see that all the time where people are second guessing their decision because I'll get a lot of messages saying they want help. By the time I get around to calling them, they don't want the help anymore because they want to bet or they got paid or something. I don't know if you run into that. Very frustrating. But leading into kind of the content creation side once again. I get a lot of direct messages. I'm sure you do as well. And within those messages, you'll probably notice some themes or some common questions. I was just curious, given that we have very, opposite audiences in terms of the demographics, what are like the five most common questions that you'll receive in your direct messages?
Yeah, I think It's similar. Sometimes I'll get emails, like these really long, heartfelt emails, and I'll respond to the email and nothing back. And then I'm always like, and then I go through this panic of like, oh, wait, did they not get the email? Did it go into their spam box? Like, do they think that I'm not responding? And then on Instagram, which please do not send me any messages on Instagram because Instagram chooses when they want to send me notifications. Like sometimes I'll go in and I'll check the boxes, there'll be nothing. And then I'll go in a week later and I'll have 3 weeks worth of messages that I didn't know. So please do not message me on Instagram. But yeah, and so I'll go through that. But some of the questions I get asked a lot are, is step work really helpful? And to that I say yes, because step work is great. And I do step work with like my sponsees, and we do a step meeting in the group. And I do it out of a woman's way through the 12 steps workbook. And it has a way to kind of dig deeper and help you identify those internal symptoms. Because for me, I truly believe that gambling is, and the response for symptoms that I need to work on. Because for me, self-destruction seems to be what I want to do. And so it's like, as I address those issues, I feel less likely to self-destruct. And so step work is helpful because it helps you kind of identify the things that we're struggling with. Because I've had people be like, I have a good life. I have a good partner. I have good kids. My family's great. I just get bored. And so it's like step work can kind of, it's got to be more than that. Like, yeah, I get that people get bored. But it's got to be more than that. Especially if it becomes a problem. It's got to be more than boredom. And so that's where that can help. So another question I get asked a lot is, oh, how do you get a sponsor? And this one is always tough, and nobody ever likes my answer to this, but it's the honest to goodness truth. The more that involved in the meetings or in your programs, you're going to find and connect with somebody that way. That's usually the best. But here's the thing, as somebody who is a sponsee and somebody who is a sponsor, it's such a time commitment for both people. And so if you're wanting a sponsor, you need to show up to the meetings. And I would give yourself, there's no time limit to start the steps. Like, give yourself some time to just get used to showing up for yourself. Get used to showing up for the meetings. Get into a thing of like what recovery looks like for you. And then, because it is such a time commitment between both parties. And like, I have weekly meetups with my sponsees and a weekly meetup with my sponsor. And you commit to that week, like, or that 1 hour call each week. Like, it is a commitment. You show up, you put aside the time, and you do the work. You do the work by doing your step work. You do the work by showing up for those calls. You do the work by showing up for your meetings. That's what sponsors want to look for in their sponsees. They want to look for people who are doing the work because, 6 months in and your sponsee goes back out, it's heartbreaking. And it makes you feel like, what did I do wrong? And, so it's just as hard on the sponsor when you go back out. And so it's like really showing up for yourself shows us that you're ready for the commitment of this kind of deal. So, there's no rush. That's what I say to people. There's no rush, and just keep staying committed to your own personal recovery. A sponsor will come when it's time. You'll meet the right person when it's time, but you don't have to have a sponsor to work the steps. You can work the steps with a group. You can work the steps on your own. That's why that workbook is so great. You don't have to have a sponsor to do it. Having that accountability is great. So third, what do I get asked? Oh, I think third is just what do you do when you don't have passion for anything else? This is a really common question because people were really passionate about their gambling. Like, oh, I just haven't found anything that's as fun as gambling was. And this is kind of a tougher one for me because by the time I quit gambling, I was so sick of gambling. Like I said, I was on autopilot. I didn't even know how I got there half the time. So I was just so sick of gambling that it was easy for me, not easy, But it was easier for me than probably a lot of people who think about gambling every day who still struggle just to not place the bet. Because for me, I was just so sick of it that I didn't want to. I didn't want to gamble again for a really long time. But you know, that's where that curiosity factor that I always talk about, that I'm sure people are sick of hearing me say, that's where that comes in. Get curious about other stuff. Like, gambling is just a thing. It's just a thing. It's not meant to define our life. It's not meant to define our vacations. It's not meant to define our downtime. It's just a thing that can be harmful. So it's like, if you're passionate about gambling, you're passionate about the wrong things, because gambling should never earn our passion, right? Painting, outdoor hikes, social, like doing stuff like this, doing a podcast on something that you are just extremely passionate about, a hobby or helping others. Those are things that you should try and figure out. You know, try new things, try everything until you find something that sticks. So that's that. So where are we at? Two more. So another one that I get asked a lot too is, I get a lot of spouses of gamblers that reach out and they're like, well, how can I help him to stop gambling? And the biggest answer to that question is it's not up to you for him to stop gambling. The best thing that you can do as a spouse or affected other is to protect yourself. And it sounds harsh and cold to the gambler, but the reality of it is like, you've got to protect yourself. You've got to protect your babies. You've got to protect your home, your finances. You've got to do all that before you can help him. And he's got to want it for himself. Like, if you back or him or her, whoever your affected partner is, if you back them into a corner and say, hey, this is your ultimatum, you know, it may get them to change for a little while, but it's not getting to the core of their problem. They have to want to change. And so that is one thing that I get asked a lot, is like, you can encourage them to make changes. You can set those firm boundaries and say, hey, look, this has got to change or I'm going to leave. Those are all things that you are absolutely entitled to do and should do as somebody that's affected by another person's gambling harm. And that may or may not push them to get help for themselves. But one thing I think all of us who are in recovery know, that it has to come from us. And that's what makes all the difference in how a solid recovery becomes. And last but not least is, do I have to do meetings to be in recovery? And I say no. Like, I know people who don't do meetings and are years into their recovery, but I think the difference is that they're doing something for themselves that is healthy. And, you know, they're engaged in recovery in other ways, whether they're part of like the Facebook groups or they're part of like the Reddit community, or they're engaged in recovery in just different ways, whether they're listening to podcasts or they have accountability partners, but they're exploring life in a whole different way. And so, yes, you can recover without meetings, but it really just depends on what other aspects you're doing to work on those changes and things like that.
Sure. Thank you for sharing those answers. And I know we get a lot of messages that have a lot of questions, and seeing common themes is really important because it gives us a chance to not necessarily rehearse, but to get a better understanding of what we're going to reply when someone sends that kind of message. So there's some value in answering the same questions a couple different times. But again, thank you for sharing. And that was all I had off the top of my head. But is there a question that you've always wanted someone to ask you that they never have?
I don't think so. I think for the most part, anything that's been asked, I generally have been able to answer. One other question that comes to mind is, a lot of people ask about why people in recovery don't mention money amounts. And I know you and I have talked about this. So what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. I've refined my answer a little bit since the first time that I answered it back. I do a TikTok live. I used to do it every night of the week, and now I do it 3 nights a week, where I'll answer questions from my community. But the question always comes up, hey, how much do you lose? First, I know that whoever asked that question is not a problem gambler, because they wouldn't have asked that question. Or they're very early along in it. Maybe they will become problem gamblers one day, but they're definitely not at that point. So the reason that I don't talk about dollar amounts is because of the value that's provided by the answer. I think that for certain people, if you've lost a really impressive amount of money, it provides a thumbnail. It provides something that can get clicked on, clickbait, we can even call it, a big headline. I lost $1 billion gambling. That's a pretty big thing. People would want to find out how you accomplished that. But when it comes to regular amounts and amounts that aren't necessarily headline producing, I think that if I say a number that is less than what you have lost, as another gambler that might be watching the content, you're immediately going to value my opinion less because you're going to have this mindset of, oh, what could I learn from someone who's not on my level? They have nothing to offer me. They don't understand my situation because what they were doing is what I was doing early in my gambling. It's nothing like that anymore. If it's an amount that is greater than what someone has lost, they'll get into the mindset of, oh, he is so much worse than me. I'm not as bad as he is. So I have a lot of room to go before I hit my rock bottom. I can continue to play. So I'm going to keep going because Rob is worse than me. And so the only value that would be provided by sharing the amount, other than clickability, other than headlines, is if we lost the exact same amount, you could level with me and identify with me as a very similar story to yours. But the chances of that happening are very low, given the fact that, if you're a problem gambler, you've probably placed somewhere around 100,000 bets in your life, if not more. So, yeah, I don't share the amounts because it just provides a disconnect in understanding. Some people might say, oh, it's just because you're young, you haven't lost that much money, it's not that impressive. And to those people, I'll say, I'm very happy that you're not addicted to gambling. Congratulations.
Right. That's a good response. And one thing too, I've noticed because, the women I talk to range from scratch off tickets to bingo to pull tabs to like the online sweepstakes kind of stuff. And it's like sometimes they'll post and you'll like every once in a while you'll get a comment like, well, is that really gambling? And it's like, if it's impacted you in any way, if it's caused a problem or harm in any way, yeah, you're absolutely entitled to the benefits of recovery, whether it was just scratch off tickets or, and I don't mean it as just scratch off tickets. I'm just saying like if scratch off tickets, if you can't go into the store without buying $500 worth of scratch off tickets, then yeah, I mean it's very valid. And so I think a lot of my mission too is when I say let's not talk about amounts of money or loss or even really like types of gambling, like, because it doesn't matter. Like, the harm that it caused us is all valid. Whether it was like, because I talked to women who didn't really struggle financially with their gambling, but it still caused problems in their relationship. It still caused problems for their own, where they wanted to be in life. And then I've, of course, talked to people who lost homes, marriages, jobs, have gone to prison for their gambling behavior. And it's just like it doesn't matter where this addiction has taken us. Like we're all worthy of the life that we want, and the hope and help and all of that that's available. So, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. I appreciate your message on TikTok.
Oh, Christina,
Yeah.
I thought of maybe a good analogy to add on to the end of that. Before we close it out, I'm sorry. I think it's comparable to how Spider-Man exists, right? Spider-Man wears a full body suit, and you cannot tell how old he is, what race he is. I mean, it's Spider-Man, so it's a guy, I guess, but to an extent, you can't really tell any identifying factors about this person. And when you paint a story of recovery, if you paint it without numbers, if you paint it without identifying the games that you played, if you paint it without age, if you paint it without gender, then what it is a story of someone who was seeking meaning in something else external to themselves, got hooked to that rush that they got from it, and let it go too far. And that is a story that all compulsive gamblers can identify with, regardless of your demographic. And so when you give the dollar amounts, when you give the games of choice, like if it's scratch offs, if it's sports, you separate someone from the message. And that message is that this addiction, this problem is the same for all of us in a different font. it's being expressed based on our preferences, based on our own experience. But at the end of the day, the recovery process applies to all of us, and we're all trying to recover from the same problem. So I just wanted to give that analogy because I just thought of it. I don't know. It was turning in my mind while you're speaking.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's a great way to put it. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on here with us. And congratulations on your 1 year. It's such a big deal. And I look forward to, you know, working with you in the future and just everything that you're doing. So go ahead and tell us where they can find you and how they can get a hold of you. And I'll also put it in the liners.
Absolutely. So I wish I had given it a little more first. So absolutely. So thank you for having me on once again and for the kind words. I'm very excited to continue working with you as well. In terms of finding me, I wish I gave it some more thought when I first created my account as to how to find me, because it's a mouthful. I go by Rob one day at a time online, and I use acronyms as my usernames on all of my social medias. So it's Rob_ODAAT. The message is there, but the spelling throws people off. So it is unique, if not easy to find. I hope that people will come over onto TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. I'm looking to grow a Facebook page, but I believe that's probably more your forte as you have a pretty big community over there. So to anyone that's listening that wants to get more involved with my work, I'd be happy to have you. And if you do want to reach me directly, the best way is via email. That is robodat@gmail.com, robodaat@gmail.com.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I think if you did a Facebook group, that'd be amazing. Yeah, well, I'm middle-aged, so that works for me. That works best for me. And it's been wonderful doing this work in this community that we're navigating. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you.